primarily the human ear, but I want to make the point that it's the evolution of the mammalian ear which I am really attacking in this talk. The ear is an amazing system. You can hear. This is a bird which I'll ask you a bit later on which bird it is. But we have the capacity to hear birds, we can hear speech, we can hear other wonderful things in nature, we can hear many, many things, and we take hearing for granted. But I want to show you that hearing is an engineering marvel. How is it that we can hear? The evolutionist says that molecules eventually merged and became people after many, many billions of years. I would suggest to you that scientific experiments indicate that codes and order came from intelligence. And may I also make the point that it's not evolution of the gaps which is the answer. Notice that I'm using the whole notion that I use, God of the gaps, and I'm putting it back at the evolutionist and saying that the evolutionist is the one who's standing on the back foot, because he's trying to argue that given enough time, we'll find it, we'll find the answer to a gap in their knowledge. But it's not possible, because the engineering is saying they could have millions of years, they could have billions of universes. The engineering is actually telling you that ears were designed. Theodor von Hamann says, scientists study the world as it is. It's engineers who create the world that never has been. I love that quote, because it's actually illustrating the fact that it's not enough just to classify everything. Lots of scientists, like biologists in particular, are very good at taxonomy. And by the way, we need taxonomy. But taxonomy is simply labelling things, right? And making sure that once it comes up again, you recognise it. And you say, that's the right label. Okay? But just to line up a lot of skulls doesn't prove that I come from an ape, does it? You can label them and say, ah, that makes a nice line. But that doesn't prove anything. It's similar with the ear. You can line up the reptile ear, and towards the end of this talk I'll show you a reptile ear. But, and then you can line up what people think are half reptile, half mammalian ears, but actually the engineering is telling you that each one is different. And by the way, I am aware of mammal-like reptiles, and I don't deny that some creatures like that may have existed in the past, but their hearing is again a totally different system. And people try to line up these ear systems and say that the mammalian ear was evolved. I contend with that very strongly, because hearing and acoustics is one of my research areas. I did research on combustion of coal, as I mentioned earlier. But I also did a lot of research on combustion and acoustics. I was interested in reducing the noise of engines, reducing the instabilities that engines have, and all sorts of combustion systems where you've got acoustics interacting with the combustion. Well, there's obviously no combustion in this, at least there shouldn't be, but we are dealing with acoustics. The Bible says, the hearing ear and the seeing eye, the Lord, and this is the Lord Jehovah, Yahweh, has made even both of them. I suggest to you, when we reach the end of this talk, that all of us should be convinced that this is the case. What is sound? Well, how do we hear? I'll touch on complexity at the end of the talk. What is sound? Well, sound is vibration in air of molecules which are hitting against each other, they then hit against others, and so on, and that wave travels through the air at somewhere in the region of 600 miles an hour. But it's a lot less than the speed of light, which is the reason why when you see a flash of lightning in the distance, you don't hear it until a lot later, because the sound takes a significant amount of time to travel. So does the light, but it's much, much less, as you can understand. The speed is so much faster. So the molecules are bouncing against each other and sending a wave through the air, which means that if you take the air out of this room, you wouldn't be able to hear. You need the gas in order to be able to hear. Sound has a frequency. How is it measured? It's measured in vibrations per second. We call that HZ after the gentleman Hertz, who put his name to that way of measuring frequency. So if we have 3 cycles per second, even though I'm drawing it sideways, please remember that actually it's a longitudinal wave, it's not a sideways wave. But we, in order to give the impression of a compression, I'm actually plotting the compression, as it were, vertically against time in that direction. So if I've got more frequencies per second, then it's waving at 6 cycles per second, as it's shown there. We can hear, in terms of human ear, down to 20 cycles per second. Speech is somewhere in the region of 4,000 cycles per second. And when you were born, you could hear right up to 20,000 cycles per second. When you were getting a bit old, like 13, you began to actually lose the upper register. And when you get into your 20s, and that really is getting old, I'm sorry, but you are already losing quite a lot of that upper register. When you're getting really old like me, I'm shouting across the table saying, "I couldn't hear what you said," to my wife. It gets that bad. We begin to lose, sadly, that upper register. Such that some people, sadly, can't hear the birds singing, which are in this sort of range, slightly above the human speech range, not much above. And so our ears cover a wide area, but it's not the same as other mammals. Dogs will hear up to 40,000 cycles per second, but they won't go down to as low as we do. Cats hear right up to 60,000 cycles per second. I prefer birds to cats. So in my garden, you would call it yard, in my garden, and that's the proper term, you've just corrupted it, but in my garden we have cat scarers, and the scarers are placed in different parts of the garden to try and get rid of the cats. But my grandchildren can actually hear a bit of the cat scarer. I can't hear it, because they won't be able to hear right up to 60,000, but presumably the frequencies are encouraging some, or the movement is encouraging some vibrations lower down, which they can hear. Sound also has amplitude. That means not how many times it's beating per second, but how much it's beating every time it's pushing air to one side. And the amplitude is measured, it's a little bit more complicated, in force per unit area, which we call pressure. There is a static pressure in this room, which will be somewhere in the region of 100,000 what's called pascals, because a newton, which is a force per unit area, meter squared, that unit is called a pascal, after Blaise Pascal, who, by the way, very much was on the side of a position of creation, as many great scientists like Robert Boyle and others, who also worked in this area of gases, were as well. And it's a very significant point that the number of people who've been great scientists who've also believed in creation is legion. Probably the greatest scientists of the 18th century, the two greatest scientists were, in my view, Michael Faraday and James Clerk Maxwell from Scotland. And both of them were clearly believers in God, not just believers in God, they believed in the Bible and they believed in creation. In terms of amplitude, I don't need to be disturbing the air from that 100,000 level by more than about 2/100,000ths. Isn't that amazing? I'm disturbing the pressure by just 2 to 10 pascals. If I really shout loud, it's going up to 20, okay? In fact, your ear is so sensitive that if you have a jet engine just happening to be passing by the way, I noticed that the plane that I was on, which was a Boeing 757, was powered by Rolls-Royce jet engines. Anyway, just making that point here. But if a jet engine is coming by, our ear is so sensitive that it can't sustain 50 pascal variations. At least it does, but it's really getting painful if it gets to 65. So our ears are very sensitive. So as you descend in an aircraft, you immediately know, without looking out of the window, that you're beginning to descend because you can sense the pressure change. Because the pilot can't quite stabilize it. You know, he does his best, obviously, to take away some of the air as you're beginning to descend, put more air in as you're going up. But we're very sensitive to pressure. So how do we hear? Well, by the way, you've got ears. And you should have one on either side. And you have an outer ear, a middle ear, and an inner ear. These parts will go through one by one, and it is utterly stunning. First of all, the outer ear, as I said, you should have two, you might like to check. They're located on either side of your head, which enables you to have a little bit of stereo. It's not as good as other creatures, because we're not generally involved in sophisticated hunting like an owl is. An owl has two ears either side of its head, but one of them slightly further up than the other. And it does all its hunting at night by hearing. Doesn't do it by sight. It's able to hear rodents. And it flies with very quiet wings, which are very specially serrated, by the way. Every feather has actually got a serration on in order to encourage turbulence at a particular frequency, which reduces the overall noise of the wing of an owl. And the owl does everything in its hunting by hearing. And it can hear the rodent. It's not looking at the rodent. As it comes down, it's flying very quietly. And using this stereophonic system, it's able to pinpoint where the sound is coming from. Bang! It comes down and gets the rodent at night. Absolutely amazing. Owls are absolutely incredible hearers. Now, we have these ears, which are not without design. In the last few years, probably a bit more like a few 10, 20 years, it's been gradually been understood that our ears actually focus in the sound to make it come down the ear canal. And the ear canal is particularly designed according to the natural frequency of that which you are designed to listen to. I repeat that. Your outer ears and your ear canal in particular are designed to be resonating at a particular frequency that you are particularly designed for. Human beings are designed particularly for speech, right? Okay, we listen to many other sounds, as I've been saying, we have a wide range. But our ear canal naturally resonates, would you believe it, at just the right frequency for speech. That's not true of other mammals, so there are some distinctions here. If I now play this sound of the bird again, just wondering whether you can recognise it. Those of you who've been to England, I'm giving you a hint. It's an English bird. Just to remind you of the mother country while I keep in touch with the colonies here. That, you know, these are proper birds. You've got mutants over here. But, so, anybody recognise this bird? It's... Red with a strange accent, I love that. Thank you, Brian, that's touche, I love that. No, it's not a wren, actually, but it could have been a wren, you're right. It's actually a European robin, okay? And a robin will sing even at night. Did you know that? They sing right into the night. Not just nightingales sing at night, robins do as well. In fact, if you've got an electric light, you know, a road light out there, they'll sing next to that. They're beautiful birds. So, but we can understand where the bird is singing, roughly we can pinpoint its direction because of our two ears. Okay, but resonance is important because resonance is when a particular tube vibrates at a particular frequency. The ear canal is just the right length, I'll show you in a moment, for actually resonating at human speech. Now, resonance is a complicated system. I was dealing with resonance in my own research because engines will vibrate naturally at their natural frequency. Power stations, right, powered by gas turbines. Sometimes we get our power from gas, right? We run land-based gas turbines. And land-based gas turbines could sometimes suddenly resonate, and you've lost, in a moment, 10 million, maybe 100 million pounds of equipment, because the engine has just suddenly resonated, and a surge has gone through and destroyed the fan blades and everything. In fact, you can get a surge of an aircraft gas turbine, which is even more dangerous. So you have to be very careful with resonance. So engines have to be designed to avoid this happening. But of course sometimes you deliberately want resonance. And what I'm saying is that the ear canal is deliberately designed to resonate at 4,000 cycles per second. It's absolutely wonderful. Because here's a bottle, right? The old Coke bottles, you blow over them and you get a particular note, right? And you blow over it because the bottle is resonating at a particular frequency. Or the guitar string resonates, or a bridge like the Tacoma Bridge, the Tacoma Narrows Bridge, which collapsed in, when was it, during the war, sometime near Washington. And also you get this effect where a glass will resonate at a particular frequency. That's what I'm talking about here. Now, musical instruments are designed to resonate at a particular frequency. Here I'm dealing with an open at both ends, but obviously you can get the same effect if you close at one end, and you can actually encourage a particular frequency to emerge from that musical instrument. And by changing the holes of the flute, which are open, and those which are closed, you can get different notes, and that's the way woodwind and other instruments work, because you are encouraging resonance at a particular frequency. And it's the same with the ear canal. It's not just a hole. And by the way, it's not big enough to put your little finger down, which is not a bad thing, because otherwise you'd be destroying, possibly, the very important tympanic membrane, which is the eardrum, which I'm coming to. And my point is this, that the resonance is just in the middle of human speech. Human speech isn't just exactly at 4,000 cycles per second. Human speech will involve going down to 400 cycles per second. It'll move, particularly with a lady's voice, right up to 8,000 cycles per second, right? So it's quite a wide range, but the main carrier wave will perhaps be in the hundreds, and this is why sometimes a telephone has a problem, because a telephone will sometimes knock off, right, some of the higher frequency, which is where the real speech is. So you hear the rumble of the lower frequencies, but the speech is actually in the 4,000 cycles per second or 8,000, somewhere in that region, which is going up and down and giving you the actual message that you are hearing on the telephone. So telephones have to be carefully designed to make sure that all the big enough frequency range is coming through. Now, this is very interesting because I'm in a moment going to be showing you that your ear is able instantaneously to recognize who the person is on the other side as long as you can hear all the frequencies. Because when you listen to a sound, you're not just listening to one frequency. It comes in with, as I've just mentioned, you have a carrier wave of a sort of four or 500 cycles per second. Then you've got other little frequencies on sitting on top of this. And you immediately recognize your wife's signal or your wife's voice and your son's voice because there are different intonations which are involving different frequencies as well as the main speech frequency. So it's utterly incredible. So it's approximately two centimetres long, which is means its wavelength is about 8 centimetres for a closed tube, one end, open the other, and it leads to it being resonant at about 4,000 cycles per second. So what I'm talking about here is it's closed one end, open the other, so the wavelength that it's equivalent to is 8 centimetres. When you do your math on that, take account of the speed of sound, 300 metres per second, that means that the frequency coming out, C equals F lambda, C is the speed of sound, F is the frequency, lambda is the wavelength, and out comes the natural frequency F of C over lambda, and it comes out to be 4,000 cycles per second. And if you just want a little bit more on this, the frequencies for maximum sensitivity for human hearing are to do with where these ones drop. So this is the sound intensity. This is what you actually hear at a particular frequency. And what I'm saying is that if the sound is coming in at near the human speech range, the amount of intensity that you need is a lot less. Your ear is resonating in this region. By the way, a stream which is flowing on a mountain stream has a particular frequency range. Guess which range it is? It's right in the middle of the human speech range. Somebody has investigated how sound of water operates. Why do we hear a flowing stream in the way we do? And you actually find that the reason you hear that sound is because air bubbles trapped in the water suddenly pop, and they all pop in the region of 4,000 to 5,000 cycles per second, which means that your ear is tuned in to natural occurring wavelength as well as human speech. Well, human speech, of course, is natural as well. So everything is telling you that our ears are tuned in to the beauty of nature. And I find that wonderful. No wonder we find it so soothing. I find that very soothing to listen to that. We all do. Because you think, just delighted in sitting by a beautiful stream. And you imagine it. And sometimes people deliberately, we were talking about this, Linda, you deliberately have noises to make you go to sleep at night. Noises in this region. It's sort of white noise. The chap who's done the work is Timothy Layton from BBC, it's on the BBC, and he's from Southampton University, and it's called The Secret Life of Waves. You can Google it. It's a lovely video. I won't play it now, but it's got a lovely point to it. So now I'm coming now to the middle ear. I talked about the outside ear. Now we'll talk about the middle ear. Now this is when it begins to get a little complicated. If you think this is complicated, it's getting really complicated by the time we get to the end. But this is what I delight in. Look at this. The middle ear. Here is the tympanic membrane, which is the eardrum. Behind it are three little bones, right? Now those three little bones are called the ossicle bones, and they loosely are called, and not the technical term is coming, but the loose term for them is the hammer, the anvil, and the stirrup. These three bones move according to the eardrum being hit by the sound. And the hammer, which is behind the eardrum, pushes against the anvil, which then pushes against the stirrup. You say, why have we got three bones? The reason is that this is an amplification system. This is a marvellous... Please don't take the baby out for my sake. It's lovely to have you, right? You are welcome. I love seeing the children. I really do. It's delightful. So if you want to stay in and listen, I don't mind the babies cry. The technical term is the malleus, the incus, and the stapes, right? But you can think of them as... I like the term hammer, anvil and stirrup, because it really is showing you what's going on. It's an amplifying system. It's making the stirrup travel a larger distance than the hammer is travelling. And the hammer is pushing against the anvil, which does this motion. And it pushes then against the stirrup. They're very carefully shaped to do that. You can't just put them together any old how. You can't just pick up any old bone and put it in there, which is, frankly, I don't like to mock, and please don't think that I am mocking, because they sincerely do believe it, but it really is effectively what the evolutionist is saying. He's trying to argue that a reptile bone come from the jaw of a reptile has actually become these other bones which are essential for the mammalian ear. It frankly is just totally wrong. There's absolutely no way the engineering would work, because these ossicle bones are the only bones in the body, the human body, and in all mammalian bodies, which do not grow. So the tiny little bones that I'm referring to, which are no bigger than, is this a 5 cent or a 10 cent? 10 cent, so it's a nickel. So, wrong way round. What is it? Dime, beg your pardon, the other one's a nickel. So this is a dime. So that this is really small, right? So these three little bones are exactly the same size when you were born as a baby as when you might die at 91. Amazing. These bones never grow. Well, all the other bones in your body grow. And by the way, all the bones in the jaw of a reptile grow naturally as well. A reptile never stops growing. His bones are growing and growing and growing until the day he dies. So there is a huge issue that is never addressed in the literature. And I've looked at the literature where they try to line up, you know, a reptile ear, and then they talk about a mammal-like reptile, the synapsids, ears, and then they line up the mammal ear, and they try to say that one has gradually changed into the other and then changed into a mammal. But they never address the issue that the bones of reptiles always grow, and it's a huge problem. I mean, I know sometimes I feel like something's in my ear. Well, you can imagine what it would be like if some creature was evolving and gradually the whole thing is nonsense. Now, why do we have that system anyway? Well, this is the reason. In acoustics, there's a big problem of what we call impedance. Now, have we got any acoustic engineers here? We've got some engineers in the audience, haven't we? Come on, Kevin, you're an engineer. Admit it. I thought you were an engineer.
I'm sorry, I'm not
hearing. You're not hearing me, seriously, and I know the reason, I'm not mocking. Are you not hearing my talk at all? Oh, I'm so sorry. Do I need to speak louder? Slower? Okay. Thank you. But I thought that we do have some engineers here in the audience. Right? I thought that I did have one or two who would understand. Do you understand? Some of you engineers would, if you think about it, you'd understand the word impedance. Impedance is when an acoustic signal doesn't carry on going. That's why it's impeded, right? Now, why do you get an impedance problem in the human ear or the mammalian ear? I'll tell you why. Because we are going to move from air into liquid. Imagine you're at the swimming bath, right? Your friend is in danger under the water. Perhaps he hasn't realized that there is a danger of some kind. Maybe there's a crocodile in the swimming bath or something. And you want to shout to your friend, danger! Will he hear you? The answer is no. He might hear a bit, but he won't hear much. The sound, when it hits the liquid, bounces off the surface of the water in that case. So it doesn't go into the liquid. Similarly, not that it's a good idea, but if you were to try and talk underwater, as I say, it's not a good idea, but suppose you were to try, you wouldn't be able to make the vibration in the water get out into the air because it would bounce off the surface. It would be impeded, right? So there is a massive impedance problem in the mammalian system to go from air into liquid. Now this is an amazing point. How does the ear get round it? Well, this is what this system does. It amplifies the signal such that if this acts like a pump to the liquid on the other side, okay? But it's come from a tiny little vibration which has been amplified. That's what's going on. Now I find that stunning. Because liquid is incompressible. You can't pressurize it. You can pressurize it a minuscule amount. But you can't essentially pressurize liquid. It is incompressible. Air is compressible. If you get a bicycle pump, put your finger over the end, push the handle down, you can compress the air, can't you? You actually feel the heat as you do it. If you now draw in the handle, having put the end in water, and draw up the water, I know it becomes a water pistol. Forget that just for a moment. Put your finger over the end, try and push the handle down, you won't be able to do it. Because water, it's not water in the inner ear, it is another liquid, but it's like water. Water is incompressible. Liquid is incompressible. So we're going from a compressible gas to an incompressible liquid. So now we're going to look at the cochlea, which is the inner ear. Now this becomes stunning. Because we've got the three little bones, the stirrup, pushing against the oval window, which is a membrane in what is like a hard shell of the cochlea. The cochlea is full of liquid, right? And you'll see here in this little video that, and in fact if I play this one as well, you can see here that the stirrup is pushing against the oval window membrane and there is a release membrane below it, which is taking account of the extra pressure because of liquid being incompressible. That one feature alone shows you that there is design. That one feature alone, if you didn't have it, would mean that every time that you got vibration here, I just play this again, every time you got vibration, you would actually blow your inner ear to bits because that membrane is essential to relieve the pressure. You see? So that's very essential. Now you might say, well, what's involved here? Well, this is what's called the basilar membrane. I told you it's going to get complicated. But it's the complication which carries the evidence of design. Massive complicated systems here, because everything's got to be right for you to hear. You've got vibration in air, which is now coming into vibration in liquid. The liquid is sloshing around inside the inner ear. Let's open up the inner ear. Now the inner ear is vibrating, and the frequency that that's coming in determines which part of the basilar membrane is vibrating. Now, the sound is coming in at all sorts of frequencies. So when you're speaking, actually, a lot of this basilar membrane is immediately vibrating. But it's vibrating at different locations depending on which frequency is coming in. So if I use this term, hopefully you can follow me. The ear is an immediate analog frequency analyzer. I'll repeat it. The ear, the human ear, and indeed the mammalian ear, it's true of giraffes, it's true of dogs, it's true of cats, is an immediate analog, because it's nothing to do with digital, it's an analog frequency analyzer. This is stunning. So you've got here a system which immediately tells you what frequencies are coming in. Now, most electrical engineers these days, even using digital technology, cannot get an instantaneous response system which will tell them what frequencies are coming in of a particular sound. They always need a tiny little bit of signal, maybe a millisecond of it, in order to be able to split it up into its component frequencies using Fourier transforms or some system like that. Okay, which we do have that today. We can do that digitally. As long as I've got the knowledge of the signal coming in, I can split it up into its frequency play. But that's complicated mathematics to do. And even Windows software can't do it. And even Steve Jobs couldn't do it, right? You're getting your own back on me. But, you know, you've got some pretty good software out there, but it does need a tiny little bit of signal. Now, let me explain this a bit more, because I find this wonderful. I'm going to play you a bit of music in a moment, and I hope you will get the point that I'm making, because this is stunning. The basilar membrane, when we stretch it out, looks like an xylophone, right? The thin bit, one end, represents one frequency, and the big bits at the other end represent lower frequencies. So it's actually like a keyboard. It's like having a little gremlin inside both your ears playing. Immediately a frequency comes in, it says, oh, I need that frequency. Oh, another frequency, I need that one. And if they're all coming in at once, it plays them all at once, immediately. So it immediately splits the sound up into its component frequencies. And that's absolutely vital, because your brain, actually you'll see eventually when I get to the end of this, there are little nerves which are taking every little individual frequency to your brain and saying that's frequency 200 cycles per second, that's frequency 201 cycles per second, that's frequency 434 cycles per second, and it's hearing them all instantaneously. We have an amazing system. Absolutely. We are fearfully and wonderfully made. Let me just play you this video and hopefully you'll get the point.
The cochlea now uncoils and we look at the basilar membrane and now see what happens when we play individual tones.
It's a nice American voice.
Now a chord. And finally something really complex.
You see? Playing them all instantaneously. As though it was an organ. You've got a little pianist in each one of your ears at this moment as you're listening to it. Your ear is picking up all these frequencies which are being played. And it's recognizing it immediately as music. And that was Bach's Toccata and Fugue. Now let me get this point over a little bit further. So you've basically got a keyboard in your inner ear. So let's look at different frequencies. I've cheated. I've used a digital frequency analyzer to do this next bit because obviously I had to do something to convey the point. So I've got here a keyboard down here, right? This is a keyboard which represents roughly the 8 octaves that your human ear can hear, right? So I'm going to play you different notes, right? So as you hear these notes, then your ear is hearing those frequencies. But your ear also can hear all those frequencies at once, playing in harmony with others. So your ear, particularly the human ear, has a wide range, going down to 20 cycles per second, right up to 20,000 cycles per second. Most instruments don't play right up there. And you can hear music. So I'm going to play to you a well-known film piece of music called Dances with the Wolves. And you will now hear, you'll hear the main notes, but you hear all the harmonies as well. Because your ear is an instant frequency analyzer and it can hear these other frequencies at the same time, which are harmonic. Your ear is designed to hear beauty. It's designed to recognize speech. It's designed to recognize music. And it's designed that we might give glory to God. So I really do want to stress that because we have such a wide range of frequencies, that means we appreciate music. Reptiles don't have a wide range. Mammals do have a fairly wide range, but their ranges vary, right? Cats go right up to 60,000 cycles per second because they particularly are interested in hunting their particular creatures, which means they can hear tiny little vibrations. Whereas reptiles are actually mainly at the low frequency end. I'll show you that in a moment. So now I need to come on to the last bit, because we've got these bones vibrating, and I'm now going to show you that we move from vibration in air, we've gone through mechanical vibration of bones, into sloshing motion of liquid, we've got the circular membrane to release the pressure there, and we've got a basilar membrane in here which is vibrating at particular frequencies, but now we've got to go into chemical energy and finally into electrical energy. We ain't finished yet. There's a little bit more to come. And the little bit more to come is probably the most complicated bit of all. I know we have Kevin here, but I've known others who've lost hearing. And it can be a number of reasons why you lose hearing. I think it's often to do with the inner ear, and it's this last bit which is the most sensitive of all. I don't know what it was in Kevin's case, but I know in other people's case, it can be that they've listened to a particular frequency very loud, and they lose hearing in that range. And I'll show you why. Because in the cochlea, which is this circular spiral thing, if we were to slice through the cochlea, it is full of liquid. I've been talking about the basilar membrane, and the particular liquid in the basilar membrane section is called endolymph. There are other liquids in here which I'm not going to go into detail. There are actually three main canals. So these canals are following all the way down the spiral, okay? We cut across the spiral just at one location. Now, underneath the basilar membrane, there is an organ which is running all the way along called the organ of Corti. We're going to look at that organ of Corti. The organ of Corti is actually... In this case, we've slightly changed the picture. We've got the basilar membrane there, and the organ of Corti is here. Now, that organ of Corti has tiny little hairs above it, right? Now, the organ of Corti is connected to a whole system of nerves which are going to go to the brain, right? And for every single bit of the basilar membrane, underneath it there is a part of the organ of Corti which is going to vibrate with its own nerve endings for that particular frequency. Okay? As you get to the very high frequencies, the difference that you can resolve is about 3 cycles per second. But down in the 20 hertz, it's even below 1 cycle per second. So you have literally thousands of these nerves going to the brain. So your ear is incredibly sensitive to pitch or frequency. Okay? Now this is how it works. The organ of Corti has these little hairs. So as the liquid moves over the hairs, it pushes the hairs over. Right? And then as the hairs push over, there is literally a spring attached to 2 hairs as they move over. And as the hairs move over, the spring opens a little trap door, and this charged fluid, the endolymph, sends a charged particle down the hair, which sends an electrical current down the nerve to the brain. This is just fantastic. These are literally mechanical springs and a mechanical trap door at such a scale that most microscopes cannot see it. You have to go to a scanning electron microscope to be able to see these tiny little springs with the tiny little trapdoor, and literally as the hairs come back up again, the trapdoor closes. So it just opens and it closes. Of course, if you're listening to very loud music, if you're listening to some very, very heavy beat stuff, you need to be exceedingly careful. Because if you listen to that one frequency repeatedly, you're in danger of breaking the spring at that particular frequency. And some people go deaf, not over the whole frequency range, but just over one particular frequency, because they've been listening at that frequency to something very loud. Maybe an industrial plant, you know, is running at that frequency. Some people have gone deaf because of that. So industrialists do need to be careful about what they make their employers listen to. So this auditory nerve then takes that frequency to the brain. So just so that you really get this idea, you've got the basilar membrane on top, you've got the organ of Corti underneath. As the hairs move over, these little trapdoors are opened in springs next to each of these hairs, and the signal comes down. The organ of Corti then sends a signal to the brain at that particular frequency. This is stunning. The hearing ear, I said, and the seeing eye, the Lord has made even both of them. And so the auditory cortex takes the signal, the spiral ganglion connects to the organ of Corti here, and it takes these nerve endings to different parts of the brain. Now, it's interesting. If it's human speech, there is a part of the brain which immediately recognises that as human speech. If it's music, the signals are taken to a different part of the brain. Nobody fully understands this, at least I certainly don't understand it all yet. I'm still learning, and I hope I will always be still learning. But the brain actually is so sophisticated, it recognises different noises. So if it's the frequency range of my wife's voice, it immediately picks up, that's the signal of your wife's voice that you heard the other day, right? So you know the modulated signal, who it is, because it triggers memories and it will go to a different part of the brain if it's speech. But if it's music, it goes to a completely different part of the brain. We recognise speech and we recognise music. It's really quite remarkable. So I think we need to see that there is marvellous evidence here that the mammalian auditory system is not a simple system and could not have evolved from a reptile ear. Why is that the case? Let me show you why. This is why, because a reptile ear looks like this. This is a reptile ear. This is a mammalian ear. Now, I do admit that there could have been other creatures in the past, which we no longer have, called the mammal-like reptiles, which have only recently been understood as such, may have been a completely different class of creature. But again, they had essentially ears which are very similar anyway to the mammalian ear. They're not that much different. So whether we're saying that one's moving from a reptile to a mammal or a reptile to a mammal-like reptile, you still have the same issue. That the reptile bone, which is supposed to have actually formed, for instance, this very important incus, right, which is the anvil bone that we must have for a mammalian ear, is reckoned to have come from the top part of the jaw of a reptile. It really is taught in evolutionary textbooks that that bone has moved to there, and that this bone has become the malleus, which a reptile doesn't have. A reptile just simply has a stapes going straight from the eardrum to the inner ear, because it's not designed to listen to a range of frequencies. A snake or a crocodile or some other reptile is just simply hearing a low frequency vibration. It's not hearing the high frequencies. To suggest that that is the case is frankly not science. It's a just so fairy story. It's not science at all. So when Richard Dawkins said in one of his books, the lower jaw, a single bone in mammals, the reptilian lower jaw is more complicated, thereby hangs a fascinating tale that I reluctantly omitted from this book. In an amazing feat of evolutionary legerdemain, the smaller bones of the reptilian jaw were co-opted into the mammalian ear. Huh? Then he says this bit, which is true, where they constitute an exquisitely delicate bridge to transport sound from the eardrum to the inner ear. But what does he mean in an amazing feat of evolutionary legerdemain? The smaller bones of the reptilian jaw were co-opted into the mammalian ear. What on earth does that mean? Well, legerdemain, when you look it up in the Oxford English Dictionary or one of the dictionaries, says this. Sleight of hand, a synonym would be artfulness, chicanery, conjuring, craftiness, cunning, deceit, deception, hocus pocus. I like that. Manipulation, trickery. One of the well-known evolutionists in my country is Professor Brian Cox, who is a physicist. And this is what he said in one of his programs, the type of programs you get on PBS and we get on BBC. You may even have had this over here on PBS. Brian Cox, in his program Wonders of Life, said this.
As continued. Around 210 million years ago, the first mammals evolved. And unlike our friends the reptiles here, mammals have a jaw that's made of only one bone. A reptile's jaw is made of several bones fused together. So that freed up two bones, which moved and shrank and eventually became the malleus, the incus, and stapes. So this is the origin of those three tiny bones that are so important to mammalian theory.
If we're going to be showing that to our youngsters at school, there is something seriously wrong if we're resorting to flick books to try and make our point. This is not true science. That is just wishful thinking. Absolutely. In that case, it is cartoons, as you say so. So I am very seriously saddened when I see that type of thing done in the name of science. The real science verifies exactly what the Bible says. The hearing ear, the seeing eye, the Lord has made even both of them. Another verse in the Bible says this, I will praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Marvelous are your works, and that my soul knows right well. Let me end on another important point. You've got spiritual ears, and some of you are not opening them. You're closing your spiritual ears to the voice of Almighty God, which has declared through what He has made that He has indeed made everything. Romans 1 verse 20 says, the invisible things of God are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even His eternal power and Godhead, right? The human ear and the mammalian ear, in general, is a marvelous evidence that God has made this as a brilliant engineer. He also made the reptile ear. He didn't evolve a reptile ear into a mammalian ear. The physics of it shouts to you that that is totally wrong. And by the way, mammals have different types of ear canals. Did you know that the ear canal of a dog is at a right angle? So is a cat's. All the different mammals have different types of outer ears. Also, we know that the inner ear is also used for balance. And to say that an ape ear has evolved, or an ape-like ear, has evolved into a human ear, is frankly absurd. Because the inner ear used for balance, and I haven't shown you pictures of this, but it's three semicircular canals which enable you to balance both vertically this way, that way, and there is a third direction which I guess is that way. but you're able to actually assess whether you're upright by these three canals, which also have their little hairs in, and it's those little hairs which are sending signals to the brain. Now, why do I mention this? Because you can immediately tell from an ape skull that it's an ape because of the position of these little canals in the inner ear, right? And to go from one to the other is exceedingly difficult because an ape isn't built for vertical posture. And the reason you can tell that a skull is from an ape-like creature, or indeed an ape, is because of these three little canals. All the mammalian ears are different because they're designed for different types of lifestyle. Our lifestyle is essentially for a vertical lifestyle. So our three little semicircular canals for balance are consistent with that. It's enabling me to balance vertically. Whereas an ape, its canals are at an angle because it walks generally around like this. It's quite happy to do so. It's not really happy to stand vertically. So, Romans 1:20 clearly says that the invisible things of God are clearly seen. But the couple of verses before says, the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who, the real word is, suppress the truth in unrighteousness. You've heard the truth. Don't suppress it. If God is speaking to you, don't block your spiritual ears. I particularly want to say to you that you've heard evidence in the first talk that God flooded the world. And as Christians, don't block your ears to what God has said in His Word and the evidence that He's given to substantiate it.